Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Phileas Club. This is a special episode about politics in France, and we're in April 2016. Hello everyone and welcome to the Phileas Club. This is a show where we usually discuss the news from the past month with people from different countries in the world, trying to give everyone a sort of perspective on things that we think we know everything about, maybe some of us. But this episode is one of those special ones. It's an episode where I'm going to be talking to one person about a specific topic and that only. And it's going to be about something that is very close to my heart, which is French politics. My name is Patrick Beja, and I'm originally from France. I've lived in France for a long time. I'm traveling at the moment. I'm doing this show from Japan, of all places. And I have, to help me discuss this very interesting topic of French politics, a friend of mine actually from the podcasting world who has been doing shows about tech and politics, or who he's been doing them for a while. He had to stop, and now he is in the US, and he's, I think, in this show of ours, we're going to be taking the roles of, I'm going to be the right leaning person and he's the left leaning person. Antoine, how's it going? How have you been?
I'm super glad to be there, super glad to talk to you. It's been a long time and I'm very excited to be there.
So you hear his wonderful French accent, which I think I'm failing in that department. But you're giving us exactly what people hoped they would get with a French podcaster. So thank you.
I know. I'm sorry.
I had to learn
English 4 years ago, and I was given 2 months to do that. So it was.
So no, but it's perfect. I think it's ideal for a podcast about France. You live in the US, you're a researcher, and you are a researcher at Harvard, is it?
Yeah, I am. So like Boston area, which is crazy right now with the marathon, but
right. So yeah, you are a French left-wing, can I say activist, or is that too much? That's probably too much, isn't it?
I mean, in France, I certainly was. In the US, it's not my country, you know, like it's not up to me to decide on not having any vote or things like that. I observe in the US.
So can you tell us a little bit about yourself so that people can place you in you know, I sort of jokingly said you were going to be the left-leaning person in that debate, but tell us a little bit more.
That would make more sense. That's who, I mean, I have always been like a left guy, but I always like participated very actively since I'm a teenager, since I was a teenager. And I was a very active member of something which can be strange for foreigners, but something called UNEF, which is the National Student Union, which in fact represents kind of a power in France, and I participated in a lot of strikes and protests, and after that, for the podcasting world, yeah, I created a podcast named Polygeek, which, as you said, was mixing politics and technology and how like politics can change. Technology can change politics, and how politics should supervise some new technology.
So, yeah, I think it should be fairly clear already to the audience that you are expressing some views of the French political spectrum. And just to get us launched into it. So the idea of the show is that hopefully by the end of it, you are going to have a little bit more of an idea of, you know, a view of what the political climate is in France. And the reason I'm focusing on the political climate in France is that I really think it's something very specific to the French culture. Every country has political, you know, political powers and actors, obviously. But I think in France, there's this sort of fantasy that we're all strike monsters and that we want the heads of the rich people and the companies. And we, you know, there's this definitely left-leaning mass that hates capital. And honestly, I'm not sure how it's not that bad. I don't think it's completely inaccurate either, but hopefully by the time we're done, you'll understand this a little bit more and maybe the reasons why it's like this and how it works. So first of all, listeners of the show will know that I like to describe France as really left-leaning compared to the rest of the world. In France, when we look at our political spectrum, we see the left and the right, and we think, well, you know, the right is on the right, and the left is on the left, and that's how it is everywhere in the world. I think when people look at it from outside of France, they see the left, which is definitely on the left, and they see the French right, which I think everyone would qualify as maybe center-right for the rest of the world, the rest of Europe, and maybe the very much to the left as seen from the U.S. I'm not sure you agree with that characterization of our political spectrum.
No, as I was thinking when you were saying that, I think it's a vision, a historical vision that would have been true in like the 80s when like France was like under more socialist president and a lot of countries were under a very, very right, aggressive against right government and destroying union, especially in the UK. And
so you're talking about the Thatcher era.
Yeah, and that changed. That changed a lot. If you look, I'm not going to describe and enter into like the proposition now of French right-wing people, because that's not like the goal of this podcast, but they are really correlated with at least the rest of the right-wing in Europa. I mean, if you just look at the European Parliament, they're all members of the PPE, so... Oh, is it PPE? I don't really
remember. Maybe it's
But you know what I mean by that.
So, okay, let's try to get down to the specifics maybe. And because when I look at the French, let's say the conservatives, let's stop talking about left and right and talk about liberals and conservatives.
Sure.
The French Conservative Party, in my opinion, at least when looking at it from the US, has all of the characteristics of a left, a liberal view. Like, tell me if I'm wrong, but looking at it from anywhere, the French conservatives are for social security, which is not quite socialized medicine, but it's certainly free healthcare or, you know.
Debate if they are or not, actually.
Well, so
there is a position you send, there is a thing you do.
I don't know. I think, you know, on some, and I think we're getting into the details that explain the differences of points of view between France and the rest of the world. Some right-wing, some conservatives would say we need to cut back on spending a little bit, but I think no one is saying we should not have socialized medicine. I think maybe there's some questions there. I would disagree, but maybe there are. But you also have everyone saying, the conservatives saying education should be paid for as well. I don't think anyone in the Conservative Party is saying we should have a system that is similar to the US, for example. I think there are unemployment benefits. Maybe we would like to get them lowered, but I don't think anyone is saying they should disappear. We have currently 2 years or so. Maybe some people are saying we should bring them down a little bit, but we have 2 years of unemployment benefits, and the conservatives are not saying those should disappear either. I think already you're disagreeing.
Yeah, I am. French people. I think that the agenda of the right wing in France, which includes our government right now,
Okay, that's actually interesting. That's very interesting. The government right now, for those who don't know, is the Socialist Party government. And that's a view that I've seen expressed by many people in France as well, which is the Socialist Party in France is essentially a right-wing government currently. That's what you mean, right?
Yeah, but they have socialist in a name, so people from outside the country could think, oh, if you're saying that socialist is right-wing, you're so crazy, and get out of my head, commie, you know? But in reality, like, you should look at what a socialist government is doing right now, like passing new laws, which are supported only by the representant of the CEO union. Yes, there is a CEO union in France because there is a union for everything. But like, they are planning to suppress 27,000 people in the hospital. I don't know what else to say. Like, they are trying to they gave billions of decrease of taxes and exemption of taxes to companies, and they are trying to pass law to go always against the worker, and everything is done for the companies. I would think that qualifies you to be a right-wing party.
So I think you're talking about the laws that are being discussed right now, the labor laws.
Not only. Some have been passed years ago, which are given billions to in tax cut.
I love how you're you know, I know that you're very conscious of the image of the left wing in France, and the way you're speaking, I think, is giving nervous chills to people listening when you're saying they're giving billions to the CEOs and the big companies. Like, you're fitting the exact image, I think.
I know, but it's actually the truth, and that's what happened, and that was the law.
So I think that the way you're describing that government is really interesting, because you're playing exactly into the description that I'm giving of the way some French people look at the political spectrum. And when you're saying, but they are conservatives, I would think that they are social democrats. That's the way I always define them, which are social democrats are the left side of the political spectrum in Europe. And I think that what you're saying is social democrats are conservatives, really, when you look at the way they're managing the economy and the countries that they're in. And the way I would look at them would be social democrats are socialists that are realistic and not blinded by dogma. If I want to, you know,
I love your way to tell it.
You're throwing out, you know, the billions to companies. So I'm throwing out the not blinded by dogma. How would you describe the social democrats in, you know, I don't know, in the UK, Germany, you know, other European countries that have them? That, I think, would you agree, first of all, that our current government is kind of could be described as, you know, sort of social democrats comparable to those ones, or not even?
Yeah, for me, it's exactly the same type of governance. Yeah, I completely agree.
So how would you describe those? Would you, you're saying that that is conservatives and right-wing.
Yeah,
right-wing.
Because I think what's important in matter of where do you put yourself on the scale in politics, it's not like, it doesn't depend on your country, it doesn't depend on local stuff. I think it's something broader. It's, do you acknowledge or not class warfare?
Right.
And
okay.
According to that, then you will position yourself in the scale of politics. And like the current in France Socialist Party doesn't acknowledge these theories that you cannot acknowledge or not. I mean, it's not up to me to judge what you are thinking at all. But since they are not, they have to be on the right side.
So that's,
which is not an insult. Again, you know, like I'm just describing here.
It's a pretty, you know, when I look at it and when I discuss this, I think you're, just to again try and put all of this in context, I think the way you're talking about all of this is, I don't want to say extreme, but it doesn't represent, obviously neither me or you represent the entirety of the French population, but it what you're saying might seem a little bit forceful. I don't think it is, it's not the majority in France, but it's also not uncommon. I think what we've seen in the movements, these past few weeks, which we'll discuss in the next episode of the show, I'm sure in the regular one, and also the what we hear about strikes and unions and all of this in France in general shows that this is not completely it is certainly a current in the French population. But don't you think it's sort of a definitive statement saying if you don't acknowledge class warfare, then you're on the right? And doesn't it make it sort of difficult to have a productive discussion if you're saying, I mean, acknowledging class warfare puts you immediately in a battling position, doesn't it? It's you against the others and the others against you.
Yeah. That's how the world is actually working for me. And I would like to tell you a bit, like maybe to illustrate more how France is. You probably don't know, but there is a very big television channel named TF1 in France. And you can see a very nice interview of Etienne Mouzot, one of the two former CEO of that channel, saying exactly the same thing I just said.
And he's on the side of the CEOs, just to make it clear.
Yeah,
he's
absolutely,
not,
yeah. Absolutely. It's not because there is a battle that you cannot speak. It's not like we're going to cut your head. It just, when I say class warfare, because I don't have like the proper word in English to say what I mean.
Oh,
I
it mean, is. It is class warfare. That's exactly, okay. You know, it's the Das Kapital. It's Marx, right?
Yeah. No, sure. But I wasn't sure the wording was exactly perfect. Yeah. But anyway, what I meant is that when there is a discussion between workers and the CEO, the reality is that the company is producing 100, and we are discussing to know what's going to be the repartition of this 100. Is it going to be 30% for the worker, 70% for the CEO, or are we going to get more as workers? And you can turn it every way possible. There's no different, I mean, it's a repartition, and that's why you have to be on one side. Because you cannot be on both sides.
So, right. Basically, you're saying the company creates wealth and you want to know how that wealth is going to be distributed. And basically, your argument is, so how much would you say is fair? And how do you even divide the categories? Because when you're talking about class warfare and Marx, we're talking about philosophical ideas, right? It's very abstract, sure. But
absolutely.
When we talk about that attribution of wealth, how do you divide the workers versus the CEOs, right? Is the CEO one person? Is it the executive team? How do you step over?
CEO was a wrong wording, I guess. I would say maybe shareholders would be a better thing, but it's really like, maybe I started on a topic I didn't really wanted to go into because okay. It's starting to be more like my belief. Instead of like France's political spectrum, but
but I think it is very it is essential to because all the words you're saying, and I think it's important that the listeners understand this as well. The words you're saying are not words that are again uncommon in France. I think when you're saying CEOs and shareholders. This is the kind of discussions that we're having in France. I'm sure it's not just in France. You know, those discussions are happening everywhere, maybe not with the same fire lighting them. But
I'm absolutely certain it's happening kind of everywhere in the world because, if you look, in the US, I mean... I'm not crazy thinking that Sanders is 40% of the Democrats or something like that. And if you actually go to the events, you will see a lot of people with the same type of belief. Oh, I don't know if believe is the good word.
No, I think it works. But wouldn't you say, I think Sanders is looking at it's funny because Sanders is a person both sides of the French political spectrum, I think, would defend and argue represents them. I think for me, as a conservative in France, and that's again that disconnect that I'm talking about when I say conservatives in France are on the left of the world's political spectrum, I would say he could absolutely fit in with the conservatives in France. Sanders, that is. You're saying it's not the case, or?
I'm not really sure it could fit with the conservative model. Maybe the idea that... I think what you're thinking when you're saying that is that when he's pro-free college, that would be a vision shared by everyone in France. And if you're actually looking at what's happening in France, it's not the case.
Are you saying we don't have free education in France?
I'm saying it's... gonna be taken away if we're not acting. I'm saying there is constant degradation in colleges in France, and they are trying to make a system which gonna look like maybe absolutely not like in the US, because you cannot make that. It would be like war for real in France. But they are trying to create very different type of colleges for different type of population, and so if you go to the good and selective college, there is actually tuition, and we are speaking about several thousand euros a year, which is not what we are thinking of when we are thinking about college in France.
Well, there's always been some small participation in colleges in France. I mean, I remember when I went to college, I had to pay a little bit of money, and it was still, you know, the quote unquote free. I think the thing that the conservative movement in France has been trying to do is to give autonomy to some of the colleges, because there is this idea that the centralized education is perfect for everyone, and what we've realized is that actually you can't tell everyone what to do from the top down. It produces uniformist and sometimes poor results for some of them, and you have to give some degree of autonomy to some of the colleges. I think that's where the changes came in education a few years ago when Sarkozy was in place, and Sarkozy is sort of a bad
word.
That's
exactly what I'm saying, yes.
Right, so you're saying that that shouldn't happen.
I mean, I'm a researcher, so colleges in France is actually a topic I kind of know. And autonomy of college created such a drama in college because it created a big financial crisis for a lot of colleges, and a lot of classroom cannot be heated during winter. And also,
but that was already the case.
Yeah, but it's worse, I swear. And also, if you go to the direction instances of the colleges in France after this Autonomie des Universités law, members of the direction can now be just nominated by the president without any election from actually like the professor, which like it has always been the case. And those person can like come from company, and the fear
from
a
companies
lot of people,
you mean? From you mean the directors of the college directors can come from the corporate world? Is that what you're saying?
No, but a director of college can named to be on the board of the university, name people they like. And
so there's no oversight.
Yeah. And then what a lot of people are afraid of, and then again, like I'm afraid of that, but you can be or not be afraid of that, is that company would like go and decide what should be teach by the university or shouldn't be teach by some university.
Shouldn't be
and
taught.
That's what,
right.
But that's come on, what that's... If, for example, I saw, maybe you don't know, but Carrefour is kind of is a company which is kind of Walmart in France. And there actually is a license Carrefour in France where you learn in 3 years just to manage a Carrefour. And so, it's the name of your diploma. It's not manage a grocery store. It's manage a Carrefour.
Okay. First of all, I'm wondering if that is absolutely horrible, because you're saying Carrefour is one of the biggest companies in the country, and it's basically learning how to manage these specific stores. But it's sort of wondering, isn't that going to give you a job? And isn't that ultimately the thing you want? Yes, I understand the company shouldn't insert itself too much in the education, but this is learning how to run this. And I'm sure if you have that degree, it's a Carrefour degree, you're going to be able to get a job in another company as well, because it's regarded as the standard in the country. And when you're saying, oh, but in the future it could become this and that horrible thing, I'm wondering how much of it is not, you know, how much of it is kind of, again, theoretical, philosophical posturing, which is important.
That's absolutely true, but I think this in France at least, this philosophical opposition is really present on both sides, and maybe you're right that give us difficulty to talk, which actually we both are able to do, so that's great.
Yeah.
But just to go back very quickly on, isn't it a good thing that, like, shouldn't a diploma give you a job? And that's a whole other debate, but I think a diploma should just make you a good human being with a lot of knowledge. And from that knowledge, then you will be able to apply it to a job. But I don't think college should teach you a job. It should teach you a way to think.
That's
you a good citizen. But that's a very different discussion.
No, it is. But I think it also sort of underlines another part of the French psyche, which is the difference between the practicality of education and really life and the philosophical, theoretical benefits to all of it. And I think there's a lot of that in France where we think we don't necessarily value the practical aspects of anything as much as we do the inherent, you know, human value of those things. And it's all, again, it's all different shades of colors and gray. I don't think people in any country give absolutely no value to humanity, I guess, to the humanities. But I think in France, we sort of tend to prioritize this maybe over other things a little bit too much. I would ask you again, it's related to all of this discussion. What do you think of the, education system in America? And we're talking about education because I think it's a catalyst for a lot of the political intent of a country. But what do you think of, you're working in a U.S. university.
I might surprise you. There is one side which is absolutely great and another side which is absolutely horrible for me. The very great side of colleges in the U.S. is that it's broad. What you learn is broad. What I mean by that is that in France, for example, I'm doing biology. When I enter college in France, I started in a biology college and made only science just after high school. And when you enter a college in the US, you have this broad education and you will specialize later. And that, for me, helps in the making of a better citizen.
And, so it's actually closer to your ideal of making a better human being, right?
Exactly.
That's ironic.
In the way of how once you're there and if you can afford to go in the college, how everything is better once you are one of the selected people to enter the college. But I saw students and they have to pay for some colleges up to $50,000 a year of tuition. And that's just impossible. I mean, I'm living with roommates, okay? And one of them, to repay his tuition, is doing two full-time jobs and then Uber when he's have enough time. That's not how a country should treat his youth. But again, that's... I'm not good. I mean, it's the US and they do exactly what they want. I'm for democracy. I don't have anything to say on how the US works, but that's just my point of view on the situation.
I asked you, so I think it's fair that you mentioned this. And I also think that this, especially specifically the issue of college tuition, which has been getting worse and worse in the past two decades, let's say, is rising to public consciousness in the US. It's certainly a problem. I think it's very fair to say that the amounts that college students have to repay after they're done with, basically, you have to get yourself in debt by, you know, dozens or thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars just to get an education. And again, I think in the US, a lot of people agree, and maybe that's part of the reason why Bernie Sanders is getting the traction he is. But I think in France, everyone would agree. And again, this is, I keep coming back to that, but this is the idea of the relativity of the political spectrum. Do you think that looking at the system in the US and how students have to get in debt to get an education, do you think anyone in France would think that's a good idea?
I think no one will, if you want to have a career in politics, will say it directly.
Oh my God, do you actually think that some people would like to have the American education system?
I do believe that, because reality is that it's a market. And if you look at a lot of political agenda of the right wing in France and in Europe, it's to open markets everywhere. And there is a market, which is education. And I believe I may be wrong, and I don't have anything like to prove what I'm saying, but I believe because they are trying to open markets everywhere by privatizing a lot of national companies, such as like the
telecom and
the gas company, the idea that was floating in the air of selling the train station to private company, which has been rejected, but all this thing, it's the idea that, and I'm not saying they're wrong, I'm saying they have a very different beliefs than me. They are saying that private company will make a better job than the government, and so we should open everything to be privatized, because then the world will run better. I actually believe the opposite thing. But in this logic of private company makes things better, and they are not bad human beings, they want education to be better. So they want education to be done and dealt by private company.
So, okay, I think in the US there is this belief that the government can't do anything. This is a caricature, of course, but there is this belief that the government can't do anything, and so private companies should manage everything. Obviously, anyone with half a brain understands that even in the US, some things the government is doing and some things the government needs to do. It seems that on the other end of the political philosophy, there is this idea that that the government should do everything, right? And that comes more or less to communism, right? And in France, we're somewhere in the middle. I think, I guess the question I'm getting at for you is, what are the things that the government, according to the way you look at the world, the government should absolutely manage from top to bottom? And, you know, so for example, Orange, which was the primary telecommunications operator in France and had a state monopoly for a very long time, the market was opened to other entrants, and Orange, which used to be France Telecom, it became Orange, and it was privatized with a majority held. The state holds the majority of the stocks. I think it's not over 50%, but it's still the biggest shareholder in the company. The way I look at it, I think that the telecommunications market has improved, or you know, has thrived since that it became open, and especially since the fourth entrant called Free Telecom has joined. It has benefited the consumers immensely with very affordable services and high quality services, especially compared to maybe some other countries in the world, namely the US. but so let's take this as an example. The telecommunications market was opened and it has market dynamics ruling it. Do you think that was a good thing, or you would have preferred it to be operated by the state?
I think I would choose a third solution.
Okay, which would be?
I think for me, there's no reason why telecom should be owned by, or anything should be owned or controlled by the government. There's only one reason, if you think about it. It's to make sure equal access to service to any citizen. And in telecom, it means make sure that someone in his tiny house in the middle of La Creuse, which is a very countryside of France where almost no one lives, has access to internet with an acceptable speed. And we all know that if we leave that job only to private company, it will never happen. And so for me, to make sure that everyone access the internet with decent speed, you need to get the government have enough money to put the work and the cables to reach this tiny house in La Creuse. And to get this money, having maybe not being an exclusive, but having a national company will use the money make in like very like in cities where it's easy to make money from internet and use that money to ensure quality of service for people living remotely, which also happen to often be like old people, and it's a good thing for them it's a good thing to develop internet access for older people because like of health issue and a lot of things like that. And communication from family. I'm not going to defend internet to you. You all know.
No, I think I would. Everyone listening would agree that the internet brings huge benefits in every aspect of society.
But do you? So I was having this exact discussion with Laure de la Rodière, which is the how do you say that? The director of new technology things in Les Républicains, which is like the French Republicans. And she was saying that, no, what should be done is having private company to deal where it's easy for them to make money, like cities. And then with the government, just have just link those remote places and like get the money back over 100 years or things like that. And I don't believe in that model because for me, it's always the same thing. When there is benefits to be done, you give it to private company. And when money will be lost, you tape that on taxes. And that's the problem. Use the benefits you can make to lower everyone's taxes.
So I think, you know, you would let's go back to that in a second, because what I think you're saying is we should make the government into a money making enterprise so that everyone's taxes should get lower. That to me seems very strange of an idea, but I think I would argue that her vision, I think, works ideally. I think it's not always going to work like that, but the idea that you give the markets to the companies so that they can create those infrastructures and those businesses at the lowest possible cost, because the cost, lowest possible cost, is ultimately going to benefit the consumers, which is everyone. Hopefully, at least, again, that's the ideal. And then
I don't understand. I disagree. Looking for the smallest cost. What does it mean? It means reducing salaries of the worker. And it means, if you do that everywhere, diminishing the global wealth of a country.
Well, if not, if you have decent competition, because the worker, and of course you need, and that's part of the role of the government, to make sure that things are done appropriately. If you have competition, then the companies are going to need to hire competent people, and those people, you have the mobility between the companies, so they're going to be able to search for the right company to pay them the salary they think they're worth. And that's why you need, you know, the government to step in when there is issues like what we've seen in Silicon Valley in the past few years, where some companies were establishing no hire clauses between them so that the prices of the salaries would remain low, and the government has to step in at that point and say, you can't do that. And then the government employs the money collected from the taxes, which is, you know, what is the taxes? Usually what a tax is the country saying, we're going to pull, you know, every citizen in the country saying, we're going to pull all of our resources together and use them to, you know, where they are needed, and the companies can't or won't, well, actually, it's better if it's only that they can't do what's required. And that would include connecting that house in La Creuse when it's needed. But ideally, and I think it's a very good example on the telecoms market in France, the market dynamics made it work, especially when that fourth entrant arrived, because there was a three actors that were basically blocking the market, and that fourth entrant came along and said, I'm going to break everything, destroy the prices, and it actually divided the cost of a cell phone contract by three, more or less. I don't see, and what you're saying is, no, the government should also have those money-making markets so that it can make money and then use it to reduce the taxes. But how can you think that things would go wrong in a company that is going to, you know, try to make money because it's going to see only profits and do things that don't benefit the general good? But the government, it should think about how to make money, and for them it would be okay.
I mean, I think you have to think a bit broader, because like each time we are thinking about government companies, because I don't believe that every type of market should have government companies. I'm not at all like that.
What do you call government companies?
Like government-owned companies.
Okay.
Like Orange, we were speaking about. But in terms of telecom, there is one side thing which is extremely important to my eyes, and I think to your eyes too, which is... I don't remember the name in English, but it's
say it in
equal
French,
access of data for everyone.
I see what you mean. Everyone should
have
access.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's infrastructure. I think everyone would agree. We all need to have, at this point, the internet is necessary for every citizen.
No, but not only that. Do not filter the content.
Net neutrality.
Net neutrality, thank you. I was blinking on the word.
Right.
And net neutrality in France, we saw how it can be tricky, like we saw with Free, the fourth actor you were talking about, when suddenly they blocked every ad to
Google. Yeah.
I mean, do you remember that moment where if you had internet through Free, you didn't, they install ad blocker to every owner, and
right,
those
but that
type
got,
of things.
But that gets so that, resolved, right? That is the kind of thing that happens. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but then because of either, you know, outrage on the consumer side, or maybe the government has to step in, then those things get resolved. I think...
I'm not sure it gets... it got resolved in this scenario, but it's not everywhere. Like, for example, if you go to a country like in the US, where it's... with my carrier in the US for cell phone, when I watch Netflix on my cell phone, it doesn't count in my data package.
Yeah, so, I know. So net neutrality is a big... I think is
a big,
big issue. I agree.
Those things... are the problems that emerge when a private company own carrier company.
I absolutely disagree. I think net neutrality is a very specific and very complicated issue, and I don't think the governments actually have a clear idea of... I think we, from the left and from the right, and actually a lot of the companies are defending the idea of net neutrality as well.
Sure.
You know, the service providers are all defending the idea of net neutrality, and the government isn't sure what to do. And not because they have interests, money interests at heart, because they don't know, they don't understand the problem enough, and they haven't made up their mind. I think this is an example of, an issue that wouldn't be resolved if the government was in charge. It's not like the government has passed a law that says net neutrality is essential. It tried, but then it, on the European level as well, it was fought by other, representatives. But it seems to me that you're always attached to what could happen, right? And maybe that's a good thing to a good way to look at things, but you're always thinking, yes, but okay, maybe this situation is okay, but imagine what could happen if that kept going that way. And the way I look at it is I think, well, if it does, then we'll deal with that problem when it does happen and we'll correct it. But it's not a reason to not do anything because something could go wrong at some point, right? Is that a fair assessment?
I agree in some parts. I mean, I think the big problem is that... Oh, I'm lost in my thoughts. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay.
It's with English. Maybe you can cut that after. But
oh, it's fine.
The thing is that... What is government? I think that's what the big problem is. As citizen, you don't have any control on private company, but right. You are a vote for your government. And that's why for critical stuff, and I don't know if we choose a good example with
the telecom. I think it might be slanted a little bit towards me.
But for education, certainly, for justice, for healthcare, I want to have control of those things. I don't want a private company to decide that. I want to vote somewhere.
I think that's very fair. I would argue that even on companies, you do have an influence on it. Certainly, you don't vote, but you choose who you're going to give your money to. That's the, you know, the basic principle of the market economy. And that does influence companies' behaviors, maybe to a fault sometimes. I think we also agree that some things should be off limits for companies. I think one obvious one is justice. I think that would be a travesty for anyone if we started giving justice to companies, which is why it makes me so mad.
Google in Europa?
Exactly. Google in Europe has been given the task. They didn't want it.
Ask for it.
Yeah. And they've been given the task to decide when to apply the right to be forgotten or not. I think that's a horrible idea. At the same time, I understand there are so many requests that it's a whole other debate. But I think for justice, it's everyone would agree that it's a bad idea when you get companies involved, or almost everyone, apparently, with this right to be forgotten. I'm wondering, again, I'm getting back to asking questions to you. Which areas would you say, maybe beyond justice, which is too obvious, no companies should have any say at all? In which areas, and which areas would you think, as again a left-leaning person, the government should have no impact at all and no say within a reasonable? You know, they should still intervene when the laws are not being upheld. But so, which area should the companies have no say, and which area should the government have no say in?
Maybe. I'm going to be super cliche and people will recognize what I'm speaking about. It's a very old article. But for which area shouldn't, the government shouldn't have anything to say, I think art is a very important thing. And I'm too afraid, very afraid of censorship. And art should be really free. I mean, government can help and give money to museum and things like that. That's important to promote art, but not to decide what type of art is made.
That's so obvious, though. I think it feels like a cop-out a little bit. I was talking about, you know, like markets. I'm talking about markets.
If you include movies in art, that's kind of a big market. If you include video game in art, which is arguably a debate, but that's a big market too.
That's interesting, though, because the government is actually part of the production process in France. It's helping tremendously. There wouldn't be a French cinema industry if the government wasn't financing it as much.
I know very well.
And interestingly, it finances a certain type of movies, and I've worked in the movie industry, so I know this problem intimately. It fosters a certain type of culture and actually decides which movies should or shouldn't be made. It doesn't mean that they're always, you know, only those movies that are made, but the majority of them are made with the government's help and don't make money in the theaters. It's monies that are paid for by the consumers, by the citizens, that are, you know, I'm sure some of them would have to be made anyway because it's art, but a lot of them wouldn't be making money at all, and people don't want to see them, is basically what I'm getting at. So that's an interesting aspect of it too.
Yeah, I don't know what was your question, but yeah.
No, it wasn't a question. It was just about the government influencing art thing. It is paying for it, but even there, it's having an influence and making movies that people don't want to see. So arguably, they really shouldn't even be financing it. That's another.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a difference.
As long as it's just like that, I'm fine, you know, because there's no, I mean...
Yeah,
I think that what I'm afraid is censorship, and here it's not censorship, it's giving voice to some artists that are not heard, and that's fine. I mean, it's the opposite, which is very striking reality.
I think you're right. It's more of a, for, you know, I'm arguing for the principle of arguing, but right, so that is a place where government should not have a say. Apart from justice, are there, and maybe education, let's put education outside of it.
Yeah,
and also healthcare as well. But
healthcare, I think we would all agree. But I think energy. Energy is something very important. Energy and water. I think that's just basic human needs, and society should ensure basic human needs. And yeah, so you asked for some, so water and energy are very important to my eyes.
So, okay, that's interesting, because currently there is some involvement of private companies in the energy market in France. It's been opened a few years ago, and they all use the same infrastructure, which was put in place by the government monopoly a long time ago. But they can, you know, it's common carrier, basically, for energy. Do you think that is too much already? Do you think there are negative consequences of this?
Honestly, negative consequences of companies that hold less than, it's just a few percent of a market. I don't think we can say anything in France so far. But what afraid me a lot is cutting power and cutting water. And again, you know, as long as it's just a few percent, but what I'm thinking, as you were thinking for the movies, is if everything is private, then we have a problem.
Right. And go ahead.
I was finished.
I don't think, you know, what strikes me here is, and sorry if I'm piling on, but it's what strikes me is, You seem to be talking a lot about, but what if this happens, right? And I think that's a characteristic of the French political discussion, and certainly it's the case everywhere, but maybe it's more the case in France. Is the liberal, and I'm saying liberal, it's the left leaning parts of the country are very worried about theoretical issues, to the point that they don't want to try anything, because what if it goes wrong? What if this goes to the extreme, right?
I disagree. No? There. Okay. There has been very important proposition from the left part of France, and those proposition are in fact the actual basis of our country. Those proposition have been like paid holidays, social equality, health insurance, social security, everything we have, if you think we own it, to fight of the left in the past.
And I think that's a very good point, actually, because all of these were fought by the you know, if you want to call it the CEOs or, you know, the haves of the country.
No, they were fought against. Yeah, very strongly.
Yeah, yeah, very strongly, saying basically what I was just saying to you. But this is not sustainable. You'll see, it will collapse the country. Or, you know, the in theory, it's not going to work because what if this happens? Or what if that happens? Or
yeah, we're not going to be... And you all know that France is a third world country now.
and you know... It's absolutely a valid point, I think, and it touches on this idea that is very dear to the French left of the. But I think, again, to a fault, maybe I'm looking at it as a pendulum, and the pendulum is definitely now in this on the side. I don't know if it's on the side of the workers. I think you would disagree with the fact that it's on the side of the workers, but. We do have paid holidays. We do have social security. We do have free education. And all of these things have been set in stone maybe, you know, 30 to 50 years ago.
Oh, no, after no. You know when exactly?
Oh, go ahead.
Is that what explained why there is a big left in France? Mm. Everything, all we are talking, so there is some which come back from 1936, but most, like social security and everything, come from the program of the resistance during the Second World War, which were mostly inside France communist, and which explain why there has been huge communist votes for the next 40 years after the Second World War in France. And everything is the program of the resistance, social security, more paid vacation,
I agree. I don't think you could say that it exists nowhere else, though. I think it's...
Oh, no, not at all.
Right,
but
so it's
even
not like...
if you look everywhere else, can you cite me one country where, let's say, social security and paid vacation were just given without a fight and were actually a proposition from the right wing?
No, absolutely not. I think I agree. I think all social advances were pretty much done from the right. I'm sorry, from the left. Nice slip there. From the left. We could argue that, you know, it was actually very wealthy people that were at the head of those movements, but that would be, you know, slipping
another
into
discussion,
another discussion.
I would probably agree.
But okay, we could talk about that for a long time. I think we're nearing the end of this discussion. It hasn't been, by design, it's not incredibly directed. I think it's more of a painting an image of what these kinds of conversations look like in France, but... You were talking about the Communist Party after the war and the strong presence of that party for 40 years afterwards. And it wasn't just a French thing. It was certainly the case in France, but it wasn't just a French thing until and it happened, you know, it disintegrated gradually and it exploded.
As the people were dying.
Yeah, basically, yeah. It was basically when people realized, oh, so it was actually not that great. But the unions play a very strong role in those debates with the political parties, and it's a basically the if I look at it as a right leaning person, the way I would describe it is the government tries to do something. Whether it's a conservative or a liberal government, they try to do something. And the unions rile up everyone and oppose it and sometimes manage to make it disappear. And I understand this is a very
caricature.
Yes, I'm sure you would. Please explain to me how the unions work in France and maybe how they are different in good and bad ways, if you can, from other countries.
So I would say that the biggest specificity to France, of France union, it's not only France, but is that there's no mandatory union first. And when a union fight and get new rights, those new rights applied for every workers and not only the member of the union. So that's very important if you compare to like what happened in Germany, for example. And we have, because there's no need for other worker, for every workers to enroll in the union, because if the union wins new rights, you will get these rights even if you're not part of the union. Unions are smaller than in many countries, but it's just a nucleus of very convicted,
convinced.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah, that's a very different meaning.
Yeah, convicted, I don't think most of them are, hopefully not more than any other, you know, political
I know,
category.
Sorry, very convinced people. And
so extremists, they're all extremists, right?
No, well. No, not at, there is actually, one of the major union is a very reformist and right-wing oriented union.
Right-wing? So, which one?
The CFDT is a very
okay, right. They're the most reasonable, I would say. I don't think I would call them right-wing leaning, but maybe.
Okay, I take the responsibility for that, which is okay. The only responsibility I will take in the podcast.
All right, fair enough.
But,
enough.
Right. Yeah, so that's what makes it so different, because you have this basis organized since so long and ready to move when there is an attack. The response against attack can be stronger than in other countries. But I also think there is a big false impression of the French of what their country are and how different it is from other countries. Because in reality, you will see strikes in many countries, many countries. I mean, look at the fight for 15. And if you look at statistics, there is like last in 2015, there has been more than 4,000 strikes in China. Denmark has more strikes per year than France. So
what do you think that
what I this- mean is that and I don't mean it at all in a conspirationist way, but strikes and protests are not part of international information, because that's not really relevant to you and me, what's happening to other countries. And so we have the impression that there is a lot of strikes exactly where we live and no strikes where we don't go. But it's because we just don't care of what's happening there.
Well, I think that a lot of people have the impression that there are a lot of strikes in France, even when they don't live in France. It's don't you think there's this image of French people always strike?
I completely agree that there is this image. I hope I told you, like just with the Denmark example, that it's not really true.
But so, okay.
But also what I'm thinking, I say is that, yes, there is this image of French people always striking, but there is the image of French of themselves that they're striking more than the other, which in fact is not true when you look at it.
So why do you think
we are striking more strongly when we strike? So yeah, that's the difference.
So yeah, is that the reason? How would you explain this image then? This certainly, I will take the responsibility of saying, you know, just like you did, that CFDT is right-wing leaning. I will take the responsibility of saying that there is an image of French people striking all the time. So that's why? Why is that image even there?
I think because there is sometimes more visibility, because how do you say that? But protests in France can be very strong, as we like unions have the guts to do something strong and block the country sometimes. Right. Like once every 10 years, you will have a huge strikes and no one will have gas and it's going to be crazy. And that image is very strong and stay for the 10 next years. to like other countries. And because it's such strong strikes, but one every 10 years, one every 15 years of those big strikes, then they are shown in international news of other countries, and people of other countries think, oh, it's always like that in France, they're always striking. But this type of strikes happen one every 10, 15 years.
Okay. It seems to me that, I mean, maybe it's the case, just like I think everyone still remembers the writers' strike in the U.S. That happened once a long time ago. So maybe if it was happening more, people, I don't know, maybe there's some similarity there.
Look at the fight for 15. We don't really speak a lot about it in France, but I assure you, it's hell of a thing. Yeah.
So, okay, actually, I don't think I've heard a lot about the fight for 15. So, you're right, we don't talk about it a lot. But the thing is, it does seem like there are some big strikes happening somewhere else. But as a French person living in France, it seems that, you know, I've seen a few different countries, and the only place where I'm actually worried whether or not I'm going to be able to get on my plane, because it's happened more than once that I couldn't because of a strike, is France. And it really, maybe maybe it's just a feeling and maybe it's emotional, but it does seem like it happens more in France than in other countries. Yes, you're right. They don't care. Well, or actually they use the weapon of blocking everything more than they would in other countries. Is that fair?
They're not afraid to use this weapon. That's absolutely true.
But isn't that infuriating, though? I mean, I can understand if it happened, you know, you're saying it's one every 15 years. I don't think that's the case. It's one enormous one when the country stops every 15 years. But every year or two, there is an instance of a strike where, I mean, even, sorry, we're coming back to technology, but the taxis blocking parts of the city or parts of the way to the airport because they're unhappy about the Uber situation. I understand they're unhappy about the Uber situation, but using this as a weapon to, you know, taking citizens hostage.
No, don't say that.
When you're blocking the path to the airport, isn't that...
I'm sorry here, but I mean, we can discuss strike and what should be done and shouldn't be done in strike, even if I think that is just up to the worker to decide. But mostly what I have to say, I really hate this work taking hostage. I mean, one of my best friends is a firefighter in Paris. I can tell you from what he told me, what a hostage crisis in Paris is. I assure you it's not a strike.
Okay, I think now you're using rhetoric yourself, but let's go. Okay. No, let's go with it. How would you describe
it? Very strong word.
Okay, fine. I'm not going to use any image of anything. I will just stick to the actual meaning of every word. How would you describe that action by the taxis any part of the population when they block the entrance to the city or block the path to the airport? They're actually saying it's inconveniencing people is too, I think, light of a description. I think it's a much stronger thing than that. Don't you think it's unfair? Let's say it's unfair. How would you describe the taxis blocking the airport?
I think what's unfair is that they don't have any other way to raise attention and also to have equal voice in the debate. Because, like, when a protester strike, what's happening is that the government will speak a lot in the press and have like, is in the fourth position, and the worker can be fired in a minute. So they need to do something big, and the only thing big they can do is stop working and protest as big as they can do. The only weapon they have is to find a way to raise attention. If they decide to find a way to raise attention by blocking a train station, fine.
Okay. I would argue that it is not the only thing they have. They have a vote, which is the way you express your opinion in a democracy.
No, that's a different thing. Like, we are speaking, like, if you're looking at the Goodyear, they all were going to be fired and, like, life destroyed and torn apart for, like, companies that are making a lot of profit but just decided that this side is making a ton of profit but not enough profit, so we are shutting the thing. And those people are reacting because it's their life. And I understand that they are reacting because it's their life, and their life is destroyed. And when the life of someone is destroyed, they have reactions that people can judge excessive. But I completely understand that they have to do something to try all the way they can, within the limit of the law, to change their situation and make it better within the limit of the law.
Would you describe some of those strike situations as, you were saying, excessive? Are some of those excessive for you? I mean, you understand them, but you would wish they wouldn't do it? Or I'm trying to understand how you view as...
The thing is that I wouldn't say that because we need to speak about, you know, a specific one, and I need to know, like...
All the details of the situation.
I wouldn't judge, right? You know, like, in general, like, you know, like, it's like saying, like, every CEO is an asshole. It's as stupid as saying as every member of the union is an asshole. I don't know. I don't know them. I don't know the context. I don't know why they're doing that. Maybe they have a reason that I don't know, and I want to know the reason before saying anything.
I think that's fair. And I think, you know, I think, again, everyone would agree that the right to strike, the right to demonstration is absolutely important. And the reason why we all agree it's important is that sometimes it's necessary and it's needed in order for some, you know, parts of the population that don't have enough voice to make their voice heard by being a little bit more forceful. I'm reminded as well of, you know, the events in 68 in Paris and around the world that led to a lot of good things for everyone in the country, at least. And those were riots, basically. They were riots in the streets, and they were kids, young people, going and throwing stones at cops. So it's definitely something that is difficult to judge.
Particularly to an increase of everyone in France of 25% of their wave.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, it was definitely a benefit on every aspect of societal, you know, any aspect of society you look at was probably improved by those. And they were riots. So, I mean, yeah.
Just to come back to what the left gave us, gave to the society, like all the thing we were speaking about, like all social security and things like that, everything came because there were a big pressure of and the government were afraid of riots. Oh, I wouldn't say riots. I shouldn't say that. But big protest.
Right.
And only when you install fear in the government, you get what you wanted. If you don't, you lose in the negotiation in France. And that's why nothing can't really change.
It's, yeah, I think that's a perfect summary of the way some people look at the way things are in France. I think other people like me think that all of this is true and is important and was important, but some parts of the left side of the political spectrum are really set in that mindset and refuse to adapt it to the reality of the situation. I think we're coming back to this idea of, you know, the importance of philosophical stances and knowing what you stand for. And it's, I don't know, it seems like, and you know, the irony of all of it is that maybe back when things that I now agree with were happening, if I was looking at them then, maybe you would have said the exact same thing. Maybe I would have said, oh, those, you know, crazy left-wing youngsters, they don't understand the reality of the world we live in today. Maybe I would have said that. And now I'm absolutely in agreement that those were positive changes. So, but that's still the way I look at it now. Maybe I'm just an older person, but...
Anyway.
But you know, one of the things that I really love about what I think we are doing here and in podcasting and in the way we try to discuss things between you and I, and because we've done this before on tech shows and stuff like that, and on this show in particular, is this ability to have these debates where we are in complete disagreement. I don't think it's shown as much as maybe the reality is, but in complete disagreement about so many things, but still being able to do that in a respectful conversation where we can both express our opinions and discuss our disagreements. And I think...
I mean, that's so important for me. And we really... I mean, maybe we don't share a lot in terms of politics, you and me, but I mean, I know you enough to know that this point is very important to your heart. And for me, it's what we call democracy. For me, democracy is not voting. It's first discuss, try to understand what the other is thinking. And after that, vote, sure. But the root of democracy is discussion. And that's why I think it's super important what you're doing here.
Thank you. And I think that's definitely something that is missing, I'm sure, in every country. And I think I've seen it in the past 15 years or so becoming less present in France. I used to think that France was a lot better than the US, for example, where we would listen to one another a lot more and we could debate. I think it's less the case now, and it saddens me greatly. So maybe that is actually the lesson to take away from all of this, is that we need more of that. So let's try and talk to each other and understand more of each other, even though we don't agree in the end. So all right, I think that's a lovely conclusion to this episode.
Let's love everyone.
That is certainly something I can get behind. Let's love everyone, or, you know, within the bounds of the law, and, you know, as long as people are not being assholes.
Oh, that's disgusting.
No, that's not what I meant. You are horrible. I meant as long as people are not doing horrible things. That's what I meant. Let's not, you know, go to loving murderers and stuff. Or, although, you know, some people need understanding too. Anyway, that's not at all the discussion for this show. Today we discussed stuff about France and politics in France, and I think we did a great job at it, if I dare say so myself. Antoine, do you have any presence on the web still? I know your Twitter account is private, so...
Yeah, not anymore.
So what do you promote for your online presence? Nothing?
Nothing, but thank you.
All right, okay. Well, it was lovely having you on the show. If everything goes well, you will be on the regular show next week when we record that. And I think it's going to be a very interesting discussion about what's happening in France, actually. Maybe you can give us some insight about what's happening in the US as well. But yeah, certainly.
I'm excited by that.
You what, sorry?
I'm very excited, and I really look forward for next episode.
Yeah, because if you haven't been following, things have been heating up in France. Like, there's a kind of a citizen movement that is going crazy in the country. So, and crazy, not in just good ways. So it will be interesting to discuss that as well. That will be hopefully next week, though, in the regular episode. For this one, as I was saying, we're bringing it to a close. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook. It's @notpad. Patrick. You can also find the show itself at frenchspin.com if you want to come and comment about everything we said today, about how it works in your country, for example. If you have a similar situation and you think that I'm crazy for thinking that France is to this side or this side, and actually I'm the one that's not looking at things with enough distance. And of course, if you want to support the show, you can do so on Patreon. There's a Patreon page at patreon.com/thephileasclub. You can contribute with your own money that you've earned by working hard. And if you want to vote with your dollars, as we do in good market countries, open market countries, that's patreon.com/thephileasclub. There are a bunch of people already supporting the show, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Really, it is an immense pleasure and joy not to just receive your dollars, which certainly it is, but also to know that you are you know, you think highly enough of the show that you're going to decide it is worth my money, and I'm going to tell this kind of production that it's worth it. So thank you very much. patreon.com/thephileasclub. That's going to be it for us. We will be back in about a week with a regular episode. Thanks everyone, and talk to you then.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Marc Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Marc.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about it.
Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.